जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जनरंजन जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जनरंजन
स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द सम ऑफ द बॉडीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 3, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, Text 26. Maitreya Uvacha Swasambhavam Nishamyayavam. Okay, I'm going to give Karnapur something to do. We're going to go back and forth. The word meanings, well, the first translation is, we've been reading all of these prayers by Brahma. Now, the sage Maitreya said, the sage Maitreya said, O Vidur, after observing the source of his appearance, namely the personality of Godhead, Brahma prayed for his mercy, as far as his mind and words would permit him. Thus, having prayed, he became silent, as if tired from his activities of penance, knowledge, and mental concentration. So, the change, it's been in that meter like the Brahma Samhita. Now we're in the regular meter of Bhagavad Gita. Maitreya is speaking, he's describing the situation. So, swasambhavam, the source of his appearance, nishamya, by seeing. So that corresponds with the beginning of the translation. Ovidura, after observing the source of his appearance, namely the personality of Godhead, what? Brahma prays for his mercy as far as his mind and words would permit him. And that is the third line of the Sanskrit yavat, as far as possible, manaha, mind, vacha, words, stutva, having prayed. Then the rest of the translation, so yavanmana vacha stutva means yavanmana, as far as yavat, mana with the mind, vacha with the words, stutva, having prayed. Then the last line, virarama sa kinnavat. Virarama, he became silent, sa, he, Brahma, kinnavat, as if tired. Virarama, he became silent so that, thus having prayed, he became silent as if tired from his activities of then penance, knowledge, and mental concentration. That's in the second line of the Sanskrit, tapo vidya samadhi. Tapo, everyone knows that one, vidya samadhi. Okay, here we go. Swasambhavam nisham yaiva, so swasambhava, seeing the source of his appearance, nisham yaivam, nishamya, by seeing, evam, thus. So here we go. Swasambhavam nishamyaivam. Swasambhavam nishamyaivam. Tapo vidya samadhi bihi. Yavan mano vacha stutva. Virarama sakinnavat. Swasambhavam nishamyaivam. Tapo vidya samadhibi. Yavan mano vacha stutva. Virarama sakinnavat. Go through the word by word again? No. Yes? No? Yes. Got one? No. Okay. Yes. Uh-oh. Controversy.
All yay?
Again?
All yay or all nay?
Okay. Here we go. Maitreya Uvacha, the great sage Maitreya said, Swasambhavan, the source of his appearance, Nishamya, by seeing, Evam, thus, Tapa, penance, Vidya, knowledge, Samadhibi, as also by concentration of the mind, Yavat, as far as possible, Mana, mind, Vacha, words, Stutva, having prayed, Virarama, became silent, Sa, he, Brahma, Kinnavat, as if tired. Translation, the great sage Maitreya said, O Vidura, after observing the source of his appearance, namely the personality of Godhead, Brahma prayed for his mercy as far as his mind and words would permit him. Thus having prayed, he became silent, as if tired from his activities of penance, knowledge, and mental concentration. The sage Maitreya said, yeah, should we do that, or should we do that here? Yes, no? Sometimes. It's optional, okay. The sage Maitreya said, O Vidura, after observing the source of his appearance, namely, the personality of Godhead. Brahma prayed for his mercy as far as his mind and words would permit him. Thus having prayed, he became silent, as if tired from his activities of penance, knowledge, and mental concentration. Okay, before we read the purport, something I heard yesterday that I thought was really interesting and I want to pass along. I was discussing with a devotee memorizing shlokas from Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and he said, memorizing a shloka is like getting a mental tattoo. Yeah, it's going to stay with you the rest of your life. Mental tattoo. Okay. So now back to the business at hand. Prabhupada's purport, there's only 5 or 6 sentences in this purport. Each line you could give a whole class on. Each line are topics that he has said many times and he's elaborated on. So he's giving, you could count about 10 different topics that he's put into this very short purport. So you could keep track with your fingers as we see how many you get. I counted 10 on one reading, and so here we go. But each sentence is itself. It stands on its own. Prabhupada could take that one sentence and make a whole purport about that. He already has. Here we go. Brahma's enlightenment in knowledge was due to the Lord sitting within his heart. After being created, Brahma could not ascertain the source of his appearance. But after penance and mental concentration, he could see the source of his birth. And thus, he became enlightened through his heart. The spiritual master outside and the spiritual master within are both representations of the Lord. Unless one has contact with such bona fide representations, one cannot claim to be a spiritual master. Lord Brahma had no opportunity to take the help of a spiritual master from outside, because at that time, Brahma himself was the only creature in the universe. Therefore, on becoming satisfied by the prayers of Brahma, the Lord enlightened him about everything from within. So did anyone keep count? It's okay. Did you keep track? Well, I read it yesterday and I counted 9, 10, There's a lot in there. We'll go through it again. Don't worry. I like reading these purports over and over again and squeeze as much as you can. There's so much in there. But first of all, the verse before it that was read yesterday, I listened to the class. Nagaraj brought out a lot of interesting things, and those who do deity worship will recognize the verse. So salvadabra karuno bhagavan vivriddha prema smetena nayanam buruhang vijrimban utaya vishva vijayaya chano vishadam madvyo gira panayatat purusha purahana. That was the last prayer that Brahma offers, and then that's it. That's as far as his tapo, vidya, and samadhi could take him. His austerities, his knowledge, and his concentration. And then he sat as if tired. He became silent. So that last one is a request. The Lord, who is supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. So it's the final part of the prayer. When you offer prayers, first you glorify, you address the Lord, you glorify him, then you ask for a blessing. So this is the blessing. Just glance at me and be happy with me. Smile. Prema smitena. Smita means smile. And I thought, what a cool name. I think there is a devotee with that name, Krishna Smita, the smile of Krishna. And I thought, what a cool name. Like someone who could make Krishna smile. Like we're so tiny. You think of the sun shining, 83 million miles away, and sun's rays are going in all directions, up, down, left, right, east, west, and a tiny little portion comes on us. And if the sun would notice what I'm doing, that's just silly, that's ridiculous. Out of the whole universe, the sun would recognize me, and I could do something to make the sun happy. I mean, it's ridiculous. And yet people do it. People worship the sun to try to get the sun's attention, make me healthy, be pleased with my offering a lamp to you, as if the sun really needs a ghee lamp. And if somehow we can make Krishna happy and Krishna would smile at us, that's ridiculous. I mean, it goes beyond logic. And that was one of the first things that Maitreya said when he was answering Vidura's questions way back several chapters ago, which we just happened to read in our other group just last night, where Vidura was asking, why does the Lord come into this world? How does he work in this world, which is controlled by the modes of nature? How does the unchangeable bring about changes and change himself, apparently? And Maitreya's first verse, he answers that. He says, some people say that the Lord is unconditioned, and yet he becomes conditioned by the world. He becomes influenced by the world. This defies all logic. So it's irrational that the source, and then in the purport, Prabhupada talks about the potency and the potent, the source of the energy and the energy. And he talks about the two different kinds of energy. We are the marginal energy, and we're influenced by the material energy. But Krishna is the source of the energy. The source of the energy is never overwhelmed by its own energy. We are very tiny, Prabhupada says in many places, we are just like Krishna, except that we're tiny and we can be influenced by the material energy. But the energy can never influence the source of the energy. So Krishna can never be influenced by his energy. And yet, that's what we are proposing with bhakti, that we can make Krishna smile. We can have some influence on Krishna. And coming up, oh man, I got a sneak peek up here. Couple verses coming up. Text number 30, if anyone is reading along. Krishna says, O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you will be able to understand everything from within your heart. And then the purport, Prabhupada says, the mercy the Lord bestows upon a particular person engaged in executing the responsible work entrusted to him is beyond imagination. So if we align ourselves, our real position is, we're just like Krishna. We've got so much power. We were talking with Pranibhushana just a few minutes ago. When you're showing someone a book and you say, and they say, I'm good. And sometimes I'll say, no, according to Mr. Rogers, you're somebody special. And sometimes they get it, they'll laugh at it. Anybody know who Mr. Rogers is? You guys remember that? When you stayed home sick from school, watched TV, Mr. Rogers was on. And that was this thing, you're somebody special. And every one of us is individual and unique and something special to Krishna. And when we move away from being influenced by Maya, we can actually become, Prabhupada says in many places, more powerful than Krishna. I think he's going to say that in some of these purports coming up, because that's what Brahma asks for. Bless me, I can do this, smile at me, be happy with me. Let's see, text number 29, in Prabhupada's purport, he says, any person authorized by either the Lord or by his bona fide representative is already blessed, as is the work entrusted to him. One should not be puffed up because he is entrusted with certain executive work. Fortunate is he who is so entrusted, and he is always fixed in the sense of being subordinate to the will of the Lord. He is sure to come out successful in the discharge of his work. So, the mercy the Lord bestows upon a particular person engaged in executing the responsible work entrusted unto him is beyond imagination. So, and Prabhupada opens it up. He says, anybody can do this. Anybody can achieve the full mercy of Krishna. You just have to want it. It's all based on desire. We just gotta want it and stop wanting the other things. But how do we do that? Just by doing this, just by reading and studying over and over again. Another thing that came up in our discussion last night was the usage of gradually. Gradually you achieve realization, and the devotee said, I don't know, sometimes it comes about really quickly. There's a big paradigm shift. But as the discussion went on, we said, yeah, but to get to that paradigm shift, there's a lot that led up to that moment. Here is a big paradigm shift for Brahma. He gets to see the Lord, offer prayers. Krishna comes to him and they shake hands. Krishna speaks to him directly. That's a great big moment, but he had to meditate for 1,000 years using tapo, vidya, samadhi, engaging in tapasya, using his knowledge, reflection, samadhi, focusing on Krishna entirely. It took a long time. Then there's this paradigm shift. So both things are going on. And even when you get this great big moment of realization, and we've all had those experiences, we get it, and then what? We spend the rest of our life reflecting on that moment, still trying to unpack it. How many times has this situation been described where Krishna comes before Brahma in the Bhagavatam? This is like at least the third time this has been described, because it's such an important moment for our sampradaya. Brahma's revelation, or Krishna revealing himself to Brahma. So even when you get that revelation, it's still gradual, because the subject matter is infinite. Even when everything is revealed to you, everything is increasing at every moment. And it says that it's so amazing that even Krishna has a difficult time keeping up with it. That was back in second canto. It says the happiness that comes from devotional service, from serving Krishna, is so immense, so overwhelming, that even Krishna cannot understand it. So that's the interaction between us and Krishna. That's just so vast that Krishna himself cannot understand it. And then the next moment he does understand it. And then the next moment it expands again. Prabhupada's purport, he says, so there is a constant race between measurement and increment. Measurement and increment, you could look that one up in the database. He measures it and it expands. And that's been going on forever. There's never been a beginning. There will never be an end. So it's unlimited in the true sense of infinite. Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. So even when we understand Purnam, everything about Krishna, it's still expanding. Krishna is still expanding. So even when we get this great big revelation, it's still gradual. From the viewpoint of infinity, eternity. Okay, so Brahma is asking for just a glance from the Lord, and Nagaraj talked about the glance of the Lord. Anybody remember anything he said from that? Just throw out a point or two. Anybody? Anything? Sa Aikshata. So the whole universe comes about by Krishna glancing at the material energy. Glances at material energy and things start happening. Time gets added, the modes of nature. Otherwise, modes of nature are in equilibrium. Nothing's moving. Modes of nature in equilibrium. I mean, they're all balanced out. They're just sitting there. Nothing's happening. Modes of nature are always fighting with each other, trying to become prominent. Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattvagun. So that's what stirs up the waves. That was another part of Maitreya's answer. How the living entity is never touched by matter. Just like the moon reflected in the water appears to be moving, but the moon is stationary. So in the same way, we, as the Parashakti, the superior energy, we are superior to matter, but because we identify with matter, when matter moves, we think we're moving, but actually we have nothing to do with that. And so that's what we're aiming for, is to lose our affection for matter, to gain that attraction to Krishna. And it comes about by Krishna's blessings. Now we're going to go through the purport again, those that want to read along. The first sentence, Brahma's enlightenment in knowledge was due to the Lord sitting within his heart. Krishna sitting within our heart, it comes from him. Those purports I read that come up later on, any realization we get, we say, that comes from Krishna's grace. It's not due to me. That's our whole procedure. Chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, Shanai, Shanai, how's that one go? Gradually, step by step, one becomes situated in the self. So in Bhagavad Gita, there's a lot about doing it on your own. You bring yourself to samadhi by your own hard work. With us, with our hard work, we bring ourselves to Krishna. And we say, hello, here I am, smile at me, glance at me, give me some mercy. That's our procedure. That's our hard work. Tapo vidya samadhi bi. We realize we can't do anything on our own. We're only trying to get Krishna's attention. Those that have been to japa seminars and you've heard Sachinandan Swami speaking, he talks about when you go into a temple, these great big elaborate temples in South India, there'll be a wall, you go through the Gopuram, the gateway, then there's another gateway, and another gateway, and then you get to the altar. He says, this is how you chant your japa. The first gateway is you get your body sitting there chanting japa. The second gateway is you, your mind is there. You stop the mind from wandering. You're just focused on the japa and the mantra. Okay, you got your mind there. Then the third gateway is your heart. You try to put some feeling into the japa. Then you sit by the door to the altar and you just sit there patiently and wait. And that door is only opened by Krishna. So we have to do the work. We have to bring ourselves through those three gateways and then sit there and wait for Krishna. So that's our job. That's all we can do. Let's just put ourselves in front of Krishna. Krishna opens the door. Here I am. He reveals himself to us. In the beginning, when someone is new, often they get a glimpse of Krishna right away. We all have experience of something like that. The first time I saw Back to Godhead magazine, I was hitchhiking. On my way to Mexico, I sat down in a park in San Diego, and there was this magazine with a colorful cover, and I looked at it, and I thought, what a bizarre picture. There was a man with, like, very dark, I didn't really think of it as blue, but like, you know, rain cloud covered color. He had four arms. And he was standing on a big flower in a lake. And I thought, this is really weird. It's so weird. It's cool. And he's holding all of these shiny things in his hands. And he was wearing a garland of flowers. And there was so much detail in the bees and the hands. There are four hands. Each one was just so detailed with the shading and the feet. And the eyes, he was just looking right at me, like really calm. And it was one of those pictures where any way you look at it, he's looking right at you. And I thought, wow, this artist really, I was thinking like, you know, surrealistic kind of artists. And I thought, yeah, this one's really interesting. And then I opened it up and I saw it was an article, spiritual communism, everything belongs to God. And I thought, oh, this is just a religion. Okay, it's just a religious picture. So I lost interest. As if someone coming up with some interesting idea like that would have been more interesting to me. But then later on, I met devotees, went to the temple, and I ended up taking that same magazine home and reading it, along with several other magazines. I needed the association of devotees to appreciate that. And that is our main process of how we make advancement, is through association with devotees. I had a lot of ideas written down, and I'm going to read that verse. This is from the 11th canto. And I didn't write down what the verse number is. 11th canto, anyway. Smaranta smarayantascha mito gauga harang harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya vibratyut pulakam tanum. Does anybody know this verse? Anybody recognize it? I've seen the phrase before, bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. The devotees of the Lord constantly discuss the glories of the personality of Godhead among themselves. Thus they constantly remember the Lord and remind one another of his qualities and pastimes. So that's the first line. Smaranta smarayantyascha mito gauga haram harim. So aga haram means one who takes away aga, like agasura means the horrible, awful demon. So the Lord takes away awful things from our life. Mito gauga haram harim. In this way, the devotees please the personality of Godhead, who takes away from them everything inauspicious. Thus, even within this world, their spiritualized bodies exhibit symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, such as standing of the bodily hairs on end. Smaranta smarayantascha mito gauga harang harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya vibratyut pulukam tanum. And in Dallas, Texas, a couple months ago, Vaisheshika gave the class at the Sadhu Sangha Festival on this verse. So when he brought it up, I was like, yeah, that's it. I got to learn this now. And he talked about this. This is what we do. This is how we grow, just by discussing among ourselves, getting devotees together, Sadhu Sangha. And he said that by bringing so many devotees together, there were 1,600 devotees at the Sadhu Sangha Festival. How many?
3,000.
Oh yeah, I'm a couple years behind. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Were you there? Everybody was there. 3,000. Thank you. And he said, there's never been such a big gathering in North America. And this is definitely going to change things. And then he brought up, he said, he was talking with Shamasundar, who's into gems and mining and precious metals and jewels. Shamasundar said that when the California gold rush happened, there was such an influx of gold and wealth into human society that it changed things. The amount of wealth in human society multiplied by 10, and brought about all kinds of changes in the world, progress. And so Vaisheshika said, similarly, bringing 3,000 devotees together for the Sadhu Sangha Festival is going to increase the amount of bhakti that happens in the world. We're going to see a big change happening, and certainly we will. Then one devotee made a comment how during the gold rush, somebody volunteered. He said, I'll wash your clothes for free. He got all of the miners and washed their clothes. And guess what? Guess why? Because all of these miners...
Gold dust.
Yeah, they had gold dust in their clothes, yes. So he washed their clothes and carefully sifted through the water. And so by serving the devotees, by coming in contact with the devotees, each and every devotee, you can get a little bit of bhakti. So I'll read that verse again. Smaranta, smarayantascha. So by remembering and causing each other to remember Krishna, who is mito gauga haram harim, the Lord who takes away everything inauspicious from our lives. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. So bhakti comes from bhakti. Bibratyut pulukam tanum. And when you get bhakti, even though you're in this material world, you feel spiritual emotions such as utpulukam, which means tanum, the hairs on your body stand on end. Okay, so this is gradual. We gradually get a little bit of gold dust, a little bit of gold dust from each set of clothes that we wash, each devotee we meet. And then once in a while, we'll see someone and like, wow, you see that person and feel like, I'm really wasting my life. I should be like them. Look what that devotee's doing. I've been around longer than them. They've made so much progress. And there's a tendency when we see someone like that to become jealous, and we respond by minimizing them and saying, well, it's not that great. They had some special situations, special circumstance. But really, what is recommended by Narada to Dhruva, when you see someone better than you, you should appreciate them and respect them and try to learn from them. And so when we do that, they become a guru. And we can have multiple gurus. We should have hundreds of gurus. I've seen some devotees' homes on their altar. They've got pictures of all of these devotees. Some of them I've never seen before, but they've got a story behind each one. This person inspired me. So just by seeing those faces, they remember them. They remember the inspiration they got from that devotee. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I love them all. The Beatles song. Let's see. I was starting to go through that purport again. Brahma's enlightenment and knowledge was due to the Lord sitting within his heart. After being created, Brahma could not ascertain the source of his appearance, but after penance and mental concentration, he could see the source of his birth, and thus he became enlightened through the heart. The spiritual master outside and the spiritual master within are both representations of the Lord. Unless one has contact with such bona fide representations, one cannot claim to be a spiritual master. So, spiritual master within, spiritual master outside. In fourth canto, in one purport, Prabhupada says that in the beginning, we're not able to perceive the Paramatma within our heart. But, so therefore, we see the spiritual master externally. But in the very beginning, how do we choose a spiritual master? And if one is sincere, the Paramatma within the heart directs one to the spiritual master. So Paramatma heart helps us in the beginning, if we're sincere, Prabhupada says. Then we get some direction from him. He hands us over to the spiritual master. The spiritual master gives us further training. And then in this section of the fourth canto, it's talking about after the spiritual master leaves, then the Paramatma becomes prominent again. And if you're really fortunate, the Paramatma directs you to more spiritual masters to help you throughout your life. Immediately after the death of, Queen Vidarbi's husband, then this mysterious Brahmin appeared and said, "Don't you recognize me? I am your old friend, the Paramatma." So I've seen how some devotees, after their spiritual master has left the world or has left devotional service, and they're determined, I need someone in my life to guide me, to push me, to inspire me. And these kinds of devotees are really sincere and they're always looking. And many of them have been successful. They found someone who's picked up after their spiritual master has left the scene. And they're doing really well. They're making advancement. I look at them and I think, I'm standing still compared to them. And I've seen also us, initiated by Prabhupada, sometimes we become smug and complacent. Yeah, I got my guru. I'm initiated by Prabhupada. I'm okay. But we need also people to push us. We need association. We need others. We need examples to look up to appreciate. There is a tendency, I'm initiated by Prabhupada. Prabhupada's the only guru. He's the only one. No one else will inspire me. But we can see others who love Prabhupada. And if you can't see others that love Prabhupada more than you, then you might want to re-examine things. There's always someone more advanced than me. We have to see that way. The spiritual master outside and spiritual master within are both representations of the Lord. And there's a quotation from Uddhava. This one I did write down. 11th canto, chapter 29, text 6. Uddhava says, "O my Lord, transcendental poets and experts in spiritual science could not fully express their indebtedness to you, even if they were endowed with the prolonged lifetime of Brahma. For you appear in two features, externally as the Acharya and internally as the Supersoul, to deliver the embodied living being by directing him how to come to you." And in the purport, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, Lord Krishna is 10 million times more dear to a devotee than life itself. And according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, even by rendering devotional service for the total duration of 1,000 universal creations, a devotee cannot repay the debt he feels to the Lord for having awarded him loving service to the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord appears within the heart as the Supersoul and externally both as the spiritual master and as his literary incarnation, the supreme Vedic knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's a lot of appreciation there, appreciating Krishna for sending us devotees, Srimad Bhagavatam. That's a big statement by Vishwanath. I'll skim through it again. Even by rendering devotional service for the total duration of 1,000 universal creations, a devotee cannot repay the debt he feels to the Lord for having awarded him loving service to the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord appears within the heart as the Supersoul and externally both as the spiritual master and his literary incarnation, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. And I'll finish up the last couple sentences of purport and then open up if there's any questions. Unless one has contact with such bona fide representations, one cannot claim to be a spiritual master. Lord Brahma had no opportunity to take the help of a spiritual master from outside because at that time Brahma himself was the only creature in the universe. Therefore, on becoming satisfied by the prayers of Brahma, the Lord enlightened him about everything from within. Okay, I said about half of the things I wanted to say, but we'll open up here. Any questions? Any discussion?
Hare Bol.
Can you reiterate that next?
Okay, but he's got the mic. Well, should I handle this one?
Well, if you want to wait till the mic goes over.
I could just repeat it. He said that I had mentioned Krishna shaking hands with Brahma. That's external. And that's external. Yeah, it says here that Krishna appeared within his heart. Yes, Krishna enlightened him from his heart. And from there on, the progress brought him to that point of shaking hands with Krishna. So both are going on, yes. Yes. Thank you.
I just wanted you to retell the story.
Retell the story?
Yeah.
That's the whole second canto.
It speaks so fast, you probably tell it in a minute.
That's enough. Thank you. Arigato. Domo arigato.
Srila Prabhupada shook hands with me, not to congratulate me, but just as a very polite way of ushering me out of his apartment in 1966. My misfortune was that I was so, agitated and so nervous and so crazy that at least we brushed hands. I could have gotten a really good grip with him. Maybe other devotees had some more tangible experience. You mentioned a paradigm shift. It's a very, I think, a very central, vital process. And I think it's something that relates to almost all of us, unless we've already arrived. Paradigm shifts, Sariputta, in one of his lectures, he said that we have this duty to stimulate people to have a paradigm shift when we're preaching. So in Bhagavad Gita, verse 2.69, I always link that verse with the concept of a paradigm shift. It's the difference between night and day. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-realization, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective soul. And the purport, Prabhupada pretty much spells it out. It's a shift from taking shelter from that really, at the end of the day, it's almost like the anchor is still in the muck where you haven't pulled it out yet. My shelter, my sense of security, even in devotional service, is still that, there was an old song in the 1960s that said, I'm getting mine, I'm doing all right. In other words, we're still, I say we, maybe I'm the only one, but at least I admit that to a certain extent, there's still a certain sense, instead of depending on Krishna, we depend on a certain level of secure sense gratification that we get during the course of the day. And there are many examples of that. Some devotees go out of their way to avoid unnecessary sense gratification. Others tend to exploit the opportunities within devotional service. So the point I'm trying to make is we're not exactly like Lord Brahma in that we don't have that solid determination, in many, at least in my own case. So maybe you could just say something about the fact that the paradigm shift, it's not like a eureka. I mean, I've had a couple of eureka moments I was just told that no one can understand what I'm saying.
I can hear you, but...
Not because of my articulation, but because of the logic. Anyway, I'll just leave it to you. If you want to give any feedback on how in most of our cases the paradigm shift is an ongoing process where we're shifting from a certain level of sense gratification to actual, real, wholehearted dependence on Krishna and self-realization. Sorry, I was a little long-winded.
So you brought up Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 69 as the paradigm shift where one sees day as night and let's see, what is for the night for the introspective sage? Yeah, due to a change of interest and a loss of interest in sense gratification. And that's a paradigm shift. And that we may have moments of revelation, of understanding that, but it just, yeah, it does seem to be momentary. Doesn't seem to be so consistent, but every time we have a momentary one, a little bit of it lingers, it stays with us. We could also quote from chapter 2, I forget the number, but Param Drishtva Nivartate, what's the number on that one? 59, okay. So 259, when you see something better, then you become fixed in your consciousness. It's not like you're pushing yourself to give up sense gratification, but you're actually getting something much better from your change of habits.
So you're suggesting that the higher taste can accelerate the process of making this paradigm shift, give us the courage to go through it and to let go of the lower things.
And for some time we spend regulating the senses and trimming things off. I was thinking how when you're backpacking, there's a saying, if you watch the ounces, the pounds will take care of themselves. You want to try to make your backpack as light as possible. And I was thinking how in our brahmachari days, we would just take a quick cold shower, and that was it. There was no scope for lingering and relaxing and spending a long time in the shower. And we didn't linger on anything. It was just get your jug, just a gallon jug, pour it over your head, soap up and rinse off, and off you go. The whole bathroom thing took about 12 minutes in the morning. Tilak and Dhoti on and everything. We're off to the temple, chanting our rounds with our fingers thawing out gradually from the cold water. So watch the seconds and the hours take care of themselves. So we're just trying to save time for serving Krishna and hearing more about Krishna. But as we get older, we need to linger a little longer, take a little longer nap, just so you can pay attention the rest of the day. We kind of need to take care of some things, go a little slower. But still aiming for that higher taste. But that's, okay, yeah, somebody had something, anybody? Thank you for that paradigm shifting moment. Okay.
Thank you very much for reminding of that Sadhu Sangha class by Vaisheshika Maharaj. We also have so many devotees in this community. You know, I'm sure 3,000 is where we are reaching. Do you have any suggestions on how we can do together a very meaningful discussion together, or other than Thanksgiving Kirtan, which is amazing?
How to increase what's going on here? How many devotees are there in this?
It's not quite 3,000. But the monkey has said it's close to 2,000, but it's not 3,000.
That was a few years ago. 2,000 was a few years ago.
Last year, she gave that count.
Last year. But then she also said every week a family is moving to Alachua.
Yeah.
Lot of time the kids are not counted. There are so many newborns
too. We need a census.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good. That would be good, taking a census. And after the Sadhu Sangha festival, I visited my cousin who lived just like 15 minutes north of where the festival took place. And we were chatting about things, and he mentioned something about his church, and I asked, well, how big is your church? And he said, well, 4,000. I was bragging how, yeah, we just had 3,000 people at this event, and he was just like, yeah, there's 4,000 people in our church, and we don't all come together every week, but, you know, usually about 3,000 make it, and but it's got a small church kind of feel.
Linda, your question was how to increase the attendance?
No, how to increase the churning of the heart.
The churning of the heart?
Yes, that's a great question, and that's an ongoing paradigm shift, and something that we're just going to keep working on, just like Brahma sitting there for 1,000 years doing his tapa, and it seems like, you know, we're just working, and nothing's happening. Oh yeah, this was also part of the discussion last night about gradually. In the old days, working with hand tools, working with marble, you got a big chunk of stone, and the guy would be pounding on one spot all day long, and it looks like nothing's happening. Just pound all day long for hours and hours. Well, you just got your chisel going back and forth. You don't see anything happening. And then, bam, one knock, and the whole thing splits. So the whole time you've been tapping away, creating this little crack in there that you don't see. So, yeah, we have to have a plan, and we got to be like that guy cutting the marble, just tap, and then, boom, it breaks. And same thing with our work. We're working every day, japa, reading, japa, discussion. You meet a devotee, you talk about what you read. Yeah, well, that's the instant answer. When you meet a devotee, of course you'd be social. Hi, how you doing? And you know, they're at the checkout counter at Hishcock's. There's devotees that work there, and whenever you meet a devotee, and you just have a little tiny bit of something that you can say about Krishna or Prabhupada or one of the devotees at the temple or something, just some little bit to give them. And when you give them that, it's, you're increasing your own, because then there's a devotee who in North Carolina, he got real excited talking about this. He said, you know, Yare Jake Tarika Krishna Upadesh, wherever you go, whoever you meet, you tell him about Krishna. I've been trying to do that. And like, he says, when I take stuff to the dump, there's this guy, and every time I see him, I got a little bit to tell him about, you know, won't be directly Krishna, but some philosophy, some higher thoughts. And he said, that guy, whenever he sees me now, he comes out of the office because he knows I got something for him. And so, like, my wife likes to give out cookies. This guy likes to give out wisdom. And, you know, when you go, you got some feed for the cows, they come running across the field and, like, they know you have something for them. Even if you don't, just they recognize you. Here's the one that's always bringing me snacks. And so if you've always got something to share with people, that's big. So that's a little bit. This will take a ishtagoshi and some brainstorming and just changing of habits, but that's a little thing we can all do.
I just wanted to support Maharaj's statement about the paradigm shift from sense gratificatory, subtle sense grad, even while doing devotional service, and to complete dependence on the mercy of the Lord. It's compared to having a disease where you can't digest anything, and you have to completely, you're nauseated every single time you lose anything you eat. But the recommendation by the doctor is to have ghee, because each time the ghee sticks. So even though you're sick, but then there's ghee, more ghee, and then eventually the health comes. Does that make sense?
Yes, okay. Something really strong and powerful. And also enjoy, you'll find some kind of service that actually helps and pleases Krishna, and you enjoy doing it. Yeah, we're going way over time. How'd that happen? And we got two more.
From a historical comments. Standpoint, I never really heard of the California Gold Rush having profound global implications. I mean, it's certainly within American history and California history. The one that I always heard, I mean, I'm sure it had implications, but the one that had I always heard that had the profound implications was the one that happened at the time of Lord Chaitanya. And I'm not talking about esoteric stuff. I'm talking about gold in the ground. When the Spanish came, you know, Columbus was looking for India. And when they came and they discovered gold in the New World, it flooded, it increased the wealth of Europe by hundreds of percentage points. And then they had money to trade with the East and so on and so forth. So I'm sure California had a profound impact, but boy, it was the one that happened in the time of Lord Chaitanya. That's the gold mine of gold rushes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Professor.
Oh, and yes, you're welcome. And be careful with paradigm shift, because that was kind of a term popularized in the 60s, you know?
It was what?
Paradigm shift. It's getting a little old as a term. It was popularized in the 60s, but we can still engage it. What's old is new again.
New application. Thank you. Did you want
to?
All right. One-on-one. Thank you, everyone. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.